No matter where you are and when you're listening, you can know that if you're listening live, well, it is 11 a.m. Pacific on a Wednesday, because that's when Voices of the Sacred Feminine is on the air. And if you're new to the show, I'm your host, Karen Tate, and Voices of the Sacred Feminine has been around for, maybe 13 years now, and has an incredible treasure trove of archives available if you take a look. Incredible stuff there with foremothers and way showers. And, we have a broad spectrum of visionaries and forward thinkers, women and men, from a divine feminine point of view. And, and I'd like to say we talk about all the my mom told me to never talk about at the dinner table. She said, don't talk about sex, don't talk about power, don't talk about religion, don't talk about politics and money. Those are all the things that we have talked about here over the years, because it does us no good to not talk about those things. Anyway, today it is my great pleasure to have with me Devorah Gren, and we're going to be talking about her book, Talking to Goddess, Bringing Women's Sacred Writings Together. And Devorah, she's a PhD, an educator, writer. She's a Mashpia. I hope I said that right. I think I had it right before, but now I'm not sure. She's founded the Lilith Institute, a center for feminist spirituality, way back in 97. She's also co-directed the Women's Spirituality Program at ITP, Sophia University, for 7 years, and she was the founding theorist of the Kohenic movement. She's taught the Sacred Feminine in Judaism for Hebrew College and Humanities and Philosophy classes at Napa Valley College, and she teaches in Yerusha's Secrets, My Grandmother Told Me, Wisdom School at the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, and she will also be faculty in their Institute for Deep Ecumenism. Her publications are many: Lilith's Fire, Talking to Goddess, a prayer blessing anthology of sacred writings from 72 women and 25 spiritual traditions; the Kohanot, Keepers of the Flame in Stepping Into Ourselves, an anthology of writing on priestesses; Jewish Priestesses and Lilith Entries in the Encyclopedia of Women in World Religions; and Spiritual Brokenness and the Healing Presence of the Sacred Feminine in FemSpec, an interdisciplinary feminist journal. She's also co-hosted the Tending Lilith's Fire broadcast for 2 years and led the Lilith Institute's Women's Intuitive Leadership Program in 2022. So welcome to the show, Devorah. I'm exhausted just reading that bio. Where do you find the time?
Thank you so much, Karen. Well, I think what you have done over the years, and it really feels like more than 13, certainly has had me asking the same question and seeing all the books you've done. And I'm so grateful to you, as many of us are, for putting forward the voice of the Sacred Feminine in so many different ways. So I just want to start by saying that.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, I really do like to say, to my knowledge, when Voices of the Sacred Feminine started, I don't even think they were called podcasts yet. I think it was just called internet radio.
Right.
So you know this goes back a long time. And, before that, I had a not-for-profit, the Isis Ancient Cultures Society, doing all sorts of things in Los Angeles. Mm. Yeah, I look back and wonder, where did did I find the inspiration? And then, you know what, it all goes back to Goddess, you know, and the sacred feminine. It's all about her. And, you know, as I'm sure so much of it is for you as well.
Yes, yes. And the things I think that are interesting to talk about are, you know, what brought us there. And for me, it was, you know, I was somebody who was deeply immersed in corporate life in Manhattan and, you know, had my spirituality suppressed, I'm sure, in a thousand ways I wasn't even aware of. And only after the deaths of two people close to me, including my husband, did I, you know, did she kind of hit me over the head and say, wake up, you know, and I really broke open to the goddess, to the presence of a divine feminine. A feminine, a female face of God, as some would phrase it, but I think she's bigger than that. You know, beyond Venus, Aphrodite, the ones we had learned about in Greco-Roman culture, you know, in school. And left Manhattan, came out to California, and then about a year later, heard of Zee Budapest and the International Goddess Forum, and attended my first women's spirituality festival. So my life has never been the same since then. And it's just so important, whatever our road in.
Well, and I think for so many of us, in a way, it's similar. And I'm sure other women may say different. But, you know, I left a corporate background in New Orleans, mm-hmm. went and end up in California, and also discover a feminine face of God. It's like, I think that Los Angeles, San Francisco area was really just a hotbed, you know, yeah. back in the day for this awakening. And, you know, in some of those foremothers, you know, like you said, Zee Budapest, you know, Maria Gimbutas, Carol Christ, so many, can't
sure.
even name them all, you know,
Rhianne yeah.
Eisler, you know, mm-hmm. you know, if it hadn't been for them, I mean, their work, you know, I mean, they've inspired so many of us. But now your goddess work sort of takes on a little bit different flavor. You know, you sort of take it in sort of the, I guess you, would you call it the Judaic direction?
Mm-hmm. Yes, although I've always done, my work has always been universalist. In that I welcome and certainly try to include in talking to goddess and in my life women of all different traditions. And I myself was for 9 years, more than 9 years, somewhat disaffected and alienated from Judaism, but still observed the holidays as my family did. But then for 9 years was also part of an Ile, a European West African spiritual house. So I began combining my practice with those elements plus feminist spirituality, which I was learning about in an academic setting. So it made for some very interesting explorations and some guilt, of course, along the way until I started learning how to let that aside and braid these traditions together, which was very rich. And in the late 90s, a couple of other women in the Bay Area and myself were doing certain functions like officiating at weddings or doing some funerary rites, certain kinds of activism, writing blessings, one of these good friends writing liturgy, amazing liturgy, and all of us writing prayers, blessings, both musical and not me, but one of the other women, and poetic and in, you know, prose, different forms of art, writing about our relationship with deity. And in the late 90s, we realized that we must be doing what women were doing 2,000 years ago. And there wasn't really a word for it. A Kohen in the line from the ancient temple through Aaron, Kohen was a priest, but a Kohenet in Hebrew means priestess. But there was no such acknowledgement of either role, for male or female, in modern times. And I had a strong confirmation of that on a trip to Jerusalem in 99. And there were some symbols that led me also on this path, including and especially by Bernadette Bruton, who wrote Women Leaders in the Ancient Synagogue. And so I was convinced that there were women who were who used the term or were called a Kohenet, a priestess, in that tradition, in the Hebrew and later called Jewish tradition, and proving it or even talking about it was extremely difficult. It wasn't not only not popular, it wasn't recognized, but in 2000, I guess it was, I did a large ritual slash performance, I guess one would call it, of women. I had about women from 9 different traditions, spiritual leaders, kept coming together to do the opening prayers, and then I had women like Max Dashu showing her beautiful work, and Lauren Rains, Masks of the Goddess, and it was just a great celebration, and it was done at summer solstice. And at that time, I knew I needed to name myself, and I finally realized that was the most authentic title to call myself so that people knew what I was doing. A friend of mine had suggested feminist priestess, and that was also true because I was working for and with women already then. But Kohenet seemed to fit because that's my heritage as a Jewish woman. Long answer to you.
Well, no, that's okay. That's okay. I mean, I totally get it because it takes us on a journey. And I know when I wrote Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, the first book, I felt like I had to sort of define what I was, you know, because people outside the goddess community didn't even know that there was clergy, and I'm using air quotes here, clergy of goddess. And I could refer to myself as a priestess, I guess, within the community, but outside of the community, you say the word priestess, and people's eyebrows kind of poke up, like priestess, priestess,
you know? Cringe.
But I knew I didn't really identify as a pagan. I didn't really identify as a witch. So I came up with goddess advocate. You know, it's such a sterile kind of a generic term, but I couldn't find anything. I couldn't come up with something better. it's a process. It is, you know, generic can be good or bad, you know. I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's not, putting a fine point on it, but at least you know you're talking about a feminine face of God and not, patriarchy. But explain to the audience and me, Dvorah, Mashpia. What is that's in your bio? Oh, yes. You are a Mashpia.
Yeah, I just got that ordination, shall we say, as a Mashpia, as a spiritual director. I always call that spiritual guide, that role, because I never direct a client, obviously, about what they should believe. A spiritual guide is meant to be with somebody on their spiritual journey. Whether or not they have a particular affiliation with a religion, they may just be on a path and, you know, things are calling them and they're not sure what it is, or maybe they feel a void in their life and they're exploring that, as I did after the deaths of these two people. I definitely had a hole in me that needed filling, and I don't think it was just from the grief, but the grief forced me to, I guess, look at it. And I was lucky, I guess, at the same time I started – I was reading people like Vicki Noble's Shakti Woman and Women Who Run With the Wolves, and even Jean Shinoda Boland's Goddess in Every Woman. And so those sources gave me some information I had never encountered before, except for Jean Boland, some of those goddesses, of course, I'd heard of. But, the idea of a woman as shaman, as Vicki writes about, you know, it was electrifying. And also the notion that Pinkola Estes puts forth of if your creativity is suppressed, so is your spirituality. And I knew that had happened to me then, you know, as I read about it during my marriage. So it was like an explosion of awareness. And I forgot where I started with that. Oh, Mashpia. So, fast forward a number of years later. And then, of course, I was doing that kind of counseling, not as a therapist, but as somebody who was accompanying women on a journey when I was teaching and later co-directing the Women's Spirituality Master's Program, which was started, my involvement started with Judy Gron and Diane Jeanette at New College, and then in 2007-8, really, we went to Institute of Transpersonal Psychology in Palo Alto and had a wonderful program. The school was later named, as you said, Sophia University. So some of that sort of guidance was going on already. And then, unfortunately, I needed to close the program in 2015 for a number of reasons I won't elaborate on here because we don't have enough time. But I started doing that kind of work. And then Yerusha Academy was offering, the Wisdom School had been for some time through Rabbi Nadia Gross. And the secrets my grandmother told me or taught me, as you mentioned, this was the teachings of Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism through the mother line. And that really got my attention. And so in 2013, I enrolled in that class. And 7 years later, I guess, in 2020, I joined another program that she was directing, which was called Hashpa'ah, which means spiritual direction, a 3-year program from which I then graduated last January. So the work is, again, just to accompany someone on their journey and to be present and to hold them, to witness, you know, things that are often missing in this culture and which are so critical to our development. So that's
right,
what a mashpia does.
So important, you know, especially, you know, it's not like in this life at this point in time we have a lot of, signposts, you know, to kind of help us along the way. I've often thought of myself in a way, even with my pink-handled machete, you know, kind of blazing a trail, you know, in
yeah.
some ways, and making it maybe a little bit easier for the younger women to maybe come after us. And of course, we're standing on shoulders of women who have blazed the trail, you know, cleared the path a little bit for us, and you know, and so goes it.
No question.
And so just a couple cultural questions before we get to your book.
Mm-hmm.
For context, mm-hmm. for listeners, I mean, I come from a Christian background. I, you know, was raised Catholic, and, you know, like you alluded to, you know, you had some difficulty with your Jewish faith, you know, when you found a feminine face of God, as did I. I was
right.
very angry with Catholicism, Christianity. I wouldn't even step foot in a church for ages.
Right. Right.
And so I wonder, is it as difficult for Jewish women who are priestesses, who are goddess advocates within Judaism, as it is for Christian women kind of blazing a trail within Christianity for goddess? I mean, are we both, do we both have an uphill battle to make
on
these patriarchal religions? Yeah, on the fringe,
or
is it considered heretical? Yeah.
Oh, it definitely has been in the past, and certainly 50 years ago, or, well, let's start 2,000 years ago, and biblical quotes like, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, you know, it could have cost us our lives in parts of Africa, and I'm sure other parts of the world, women who are thought to be witches are brutally murdered. So, yes. Always very dangerous. Of course, you know about the burning times and the Inquisition and millions of women and men being burned and killed for being healers and midwives and so on. Not quite as dangerous, let's say, at least in this country, in most quarters, but still dangerous, certainly dangerous if you're thought of as a witch. And I once, when I moved to where I live now, which is North Bay, California, North Bay Area, I went to a bookstore and asked to see women's spirituality section, and they led me to an occult and witchcraft section. So, you know, there's a lot of confusion. I think it's gotten cleared up a lot because it's now more in the language, people's everyday language, and we're making distinctions. A lot of the progress we've made in the recognition of a priestess role came through the work of Rabbi Jill Hammer and her co-founder of the Hebrew Priestess, Kohenet Institute. They were training priestesses And they just closed this summer, but they've done that very successfully for about 17 years. I was happy to be on the founding advisory board years ago, and they started, my festival was 2000, so they started about 2005 and have trained, either ordained or initiated about 120, I think, women as Kohanot. And what's very exciting about that is that has gained recognition in the world, you know, and not the wide world, but in a number of quarters and in certain congregations. I think Jewish renewal movement is more open to it, maybe also the Reform branch. Judaism, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, is has been broken down into Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox branches, so to speak, with Reconstructionist in between and Jewish renewal being more of a movement than a branch, because it's very much, first of all, mystical, as I said, and also very activist in terms of social action. And so are many of these priestesses that have graduated that program. So they are also healers, they're activists, they're educators. There's a wide spectrum, but now you see people recognizing the role and even bringing some in as guests, if not yet clergy, but we're close to that. And in a couple of cases, one with my friend Annie Matan in Toronto is now with an organization and has been hired as a Kohenet. So that's very exciting. And
yeah.
I think that will continue to unfold. Yeah.
Well, and for listeners who don't know, there's actually a thing called woman priests, where women who are in the Christian faith actually go offshore in a boat and are ordained as woman priests, and that is really a thing.
Yes.
And then they come back, you know, after ordination on this boat, which is in international waters. That's the way it has to be. It's really
and is
just
it done
crazy.
By the Anglican women?
Women
from England?
You know, I'm not sure of quite all of the details. I remember interviewing a woman here on the show back in, I guess, the 2000s, and I don't recall, honestly.
I think I read that somewhere, but I'm sure other women, too, yeah.
Yeah, and so there are official woman priests out there. I guess just like they can be a pastor or a rabbi in some, you know, areas of their faiths, you know. But you know, it's just incredible when you think about the hoops women have to jump through order to serve their community and serve their deity, you know.
Yes, absolutely. And also the amount of respect or lack of it. I remember a good friend who you probably know, Kahuna Leilani Spirely, who founded Daughters of the Goddess, and around the same time I founded Lilith Institute in 97. She has been running women's circles for many years, and I remember her talking in the early days about people's attitudes about paying for a ritual or an event, because they weren't yet considering pagan clergy as clergy. So they, you know, where they would pay a pastor, a priest, a rabbi with no problem, that was an uphill battle too. The good thing I can report is that there are a lot more women rabbis now. It wasn't, I think, until early 2000s or in the 90s, I think, that conservative women could be ordained as a rabbi in conservative Judaism. And the outliers who were privately ordained or in Reform, it started in the early 70s. Rabbi Lynn Gottlieb of Berkeley was one of the first to be so ordained, and Sally Prezant. But now, one other change, Orthodox women could not. They can now, rarely, but they don't have a congregation. So it's an uphill battle still for Orthodox, I think, even modern Orthodox women. But in terms of Reform, Conservative, Reconstructionist, Renewal, there are a lot of women rabbis who are clergy in institutions, you know, in temples and synagogues. So that is a progress.
Well, one last question, and I promise we're going to get to your book. You're the expert here. We know back in the Bible, you know, the men were all bent out of shape because the women were baking cakes to the Queen of Heaven. you know, and the women were the ones that wouldn't let go of that feminine face of God. And I think they even mm-hmm. got the blame for Babylon taking them over because the women were continued to be loyal to Goddess. And correct me if I'm wrong about any of this, but could you speak to that a little bit? And what goddess were these women speaking to? And were they also Canaanite women? Were they Canaanite and Jewish women combined?
Yes, definitely. One thing, I don't know about the piece you were speaking to, but I can say that there was this whole discussion with women and the prophet Jeremiah, where they pointed out, look what happened when we stopped offering cakes to the Queen of Heaven. That's what I think what you're talking about, and that the food was running low, and the libations, you know, having enough food and water was a problem, and other kinds of regional and local, and I'm sure they thought global lifestyle issues, and that things were just falling apart basically when we stopped baking those cakes. So there is that. It certainly is Asherah, she has been taught often purely as a Canaanite goddess. But what more and more people are admitting or learning because of the work of some great scholars, especially William Deaver, is that by whatever name, whether they were doing it as Jews but definitely, I would say, together with Canaanites, you know, things you would have read 15 years ago would have just said it was the Canaanite women and men who were worshiping Asherah, but definitely it was the Jews as well. And I don't know what kind of distinctions they even all made at that time, you know, but we have all kinds of proofs of her worship on the hillside, and even in the temple, the official temple, for I think 400 years until King Josiah, and you can read this in Kings, it's quite disturbing, but you can read how he ordered all evidence of her removed, which of course tells us it was pretty widespread. So whatever they were trying to make happen, which I think was just forcing this focus purely on a sole monotheistic male god, and regarding anything else as a threat, and called them idolatry. We have evidence of Asherah because the women wove what are called batim, B-A-T-I-M, which we think could have been, we don't really know, but we think they could have been like a small weaving that you would hang on a wall. Or I sometimes think of it as maybe it was a woven little shrine house. In I think Shinto religion, there is a kind, and other religions, a little wooden house that is a tiny shrine, you know, that you might put foods or flowers at or incense. I don't know where this was placed in the temple, but the king definitely wanted it all removed. There was also, her presence was also indicated by an Asherah pole that would be standing in the ground. So different representations, symbolic representations. And what you can read about in Kings and elsewhere, I think Deuteronomy and a little bit in Exodus, is how vicious her removal was. You know, so that tells you that as folk religion, it was very present. You know, even if people were also worshiping the one God, so to speak. And you can tell this because not only was the king saying you've got to, you know, risk, tear out all evidence, you know, any sign of her comes out of the temple or out of the local synagogue. And in at least one case, that anything, including, I think, the poles, were to be ground up into dust. So that's already bad enough. But even more vitriolic description is in one case where you would grind up any evidence of her. So I don't know if these might have also been images as well as the pole, and then grind up into dust and go up in the hill, on the hill where we know the worship happened, and throw that dust over graves. How much do you have to hate something to prescribe that, to order that?
Yeah.
Kind of removal.
Well,
right?
And not just hate it, but maybe fear it. You know,
sure.
I think fear it too.
Threatened by
yeah.
It. Yes. Yes. I would totally agree with that. Yeah.
So the newest book, Talking to Goddess, why did you put it together? Tell us mm-hmm. about it and how people use it.
Well, I started thinking about it maybe around 2005 and put out a call for submissions. And by 2007, I had enough to put together a small booklet. It was 8 by 10, but it was coil bound at Kinko's. You know, I don't remember how many submissions or contributions I had in there, but I had it at actually a Women's Rights of Spring festival that I co-led with Leilani for 4 years. And I had it in by 2007. I was able to have a printed copy available for people, and then it kept nagging at me, and I decided I wanted to turn it into a book, and I'll read you a little bit of the history. And by 2009, with the help of Sochi Valdez, an amazing artist, graphic designer, and Yoruba priest with a really wonderful sense of just how this thing should be laid out, and also she was a contributor. We did that together, and I gathered the work of 72 women from 25 spiritual traditions, which I look back and I would have liked to include even some more. But I had a 3-month deadline at that point, which is, a great way to get projects done. I was going back to South Africa where I had done my doctoral research. I was going back in August of 2009, and so we had 3 months to get this fully done, and we did it. So I can read you a little bit from the introduction if you like.
Sure.
That'll answer your question. Okay. This book reflects a decade of my listening to women's voices and bringing together women from different spiritual and cultural traditions to pray, play, and celebrate their lives and their relationships with deity. The volume has also been driven by my own connection to spirit, questions about her mysteries, my constant impossible desire to define her, and the wish to share the energies and essences of both public and private ceremonies and rituals of which I've been a part over the past 15 years. I just want to mention that, which a number of people have taken exception to over the years, but I capitalize the word her when I'm talking about goddess.
Oh, so do I. And she, and goddess.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
My passion for compiling these sacred words arose out of the desire I see in other women and men to unite with her, and out of the need to proclaim more loudly and more often the sacred qualities of women's everyday lives and words. I'm greatly indebted to these women who believed in and supported this project, generously contributing their germinal work, thank you, Judy Grun, rather than saying seminal, we use the word germinal, work and energy to bring it to life. The prayers contained herein are original works by the authors. A number of them were written expressly for this book. Some women thought it important to bring back work they'd done years ago to bring awareness to a new generation. Others were kind enough to share glimpses of forthcoming books and articles. And I especially thank Judy Grun, Louisa Teach, and Diane Jeanette for inspiring and conspiring and for their generosity in contributing their arts, both written and visual, to this project. So it was important to me because I think women, it makes a big difference in women's lives to know about the sacred feminine, even if they have to secretly think about her and are horrified when they first hear the word goddess or the idea of picturing God as partly female or with female aspects. The visual piece that I was thanking Diane Jeanette for is an amazing photo, which is on the cover of the goddess Kali Ma, Bhadra Kali, in a beautiful altar built to her in central India. So let me see, did I answer your question?
No, I think so.
Okay,
go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, just a quick thing. You asked how it's being used. From what I know, it's used in some classes. I occasionally use it in classes, and I know others do. Leading women's circles. People have ordered it for that, to share it in circle. And I know one woman, and I'm sure she's not the only one, and I appreciate it that she shared this with me as it's become part of her practice, and that is to read from it every day as part of her morning practice. I occasionally
and inspirational.
Exactly. And sometimes I will do what we call bibliomancy, for those who may have never heard that word, a type of divination where you just open a book without looking to whatever page falls open, and you take a message from that. Or in my case, I would read. I just did that right now. and got one from Jan Jobling of Liverpool called Of Flames and Ashes.
It's fun. How appropriate.
Indeed.
So, Deborah, speak to the value of women writing their own prayers.
I can't overstate it. I think when we take agency to do that, it takes a lot to get over the hump that says, you don't have any right to do this. Who are you to rewrite this prayer or write any prayer? You're not ordained clergy. You know what I mean? You're not a teacher or an educator, or your English isn't good enough, or your writing isn't good enough, which it has nothing to do with, really. You know, that thing, that inner critic that rises up so strongly in us on many fronts, whether we're cooking or parenting or writing or teaching or many other fields, probably every field. Right? And so being able to confront that and do it anyway, to move through that fear or that timidness or that overabundance of humility. And it's very empowering. And when I was teaching, I think Women's Sacred Texts years ago, I asked the women to work with a piece of, I think maybe beginning half or beginning parts of Genesis. There was a lot of resistance to that, but I wanted them to rewrite it in some way. And the two who resisted most strongly were crying as they read what they had written. You know, so that told me, and that was early 2000s, that told me what a powerful practice it is. In Judaism, there's a practice called Midrash. It's kind of like exegesis, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong there, but in terms of it's a retelling, a reinterpretation, and that often means a rewriting of something from the Bible, or what we would call Torah. And so Judith Plaskow has done a great job of this, you know, with the Lilith story, Lilith, the first woman, and where she has Lilith and Eve coming together and becoming friends instead of competitors, you know. So there are many, many Midrashim, you know, and it's a story that you write. And so I think it's important because women, you know, when you step forward into a role that you either were always told you couldn't do or was only assigned to men, it's very empowering and changes your view of yourself as well as what you can bring to the role.
Well, and I, you know, it's like I think we get these ideas through osmosis, maybe. I know it was back in 2015, the parliament that they had in Utah, I gave a talk there called Reawakening Our Earliest Sacred Stories, and it was about women giving themselves permission to do just this. And I didn't know about Midrash, you know. I've been teaching that class for a number of years, and it sounds so simple, but it really takes it takes some gumption, if you will, I guess, for some women to take the reins and rewrite the narratives because you know, they've devalued themselves. You know, somehow they think these male church leaders were so much more divinely inspired or had some authority that, you know, I guess we don't, I know for me, I didn't recognize that authority anymore. So for me, it wasn't a big deal. But for some people, it's like, well, these are still the authorities. How dare we? This is heretical.
Exactly.
But, you know, I think it's,
how
I think
could
it's
I
necessary.
Question. Yeah. It's very necessary.
Exactly.
I want to bring in a poem, if I may. Go ahead. You were going to
say
something.
No, you go ahead with the poem.
One of the other women who has been doing women's spirituality as well as amazing amounts of women's activism, which changed all our lives and was co-founder of the lesbian feminist movement, is Judy Grahn, as you know. And so her work in women's spirituality has taken a number of different forms. And one of the things is, and in fact, I want to just mention, I'll come back to it, sorry. I want to mention and read this poem, which I called a piece of liturgy called May We Embrace, in the opening pages of Talking to Goddess. Great Mother, Great Spirit, Great Mother-Father God, may we embrace. those whose deity is a talkative stone, a sacred tree or reindeer. May we embrace those whose deity is a complex historic story of martyrdom, suffering, and redemption. May we embrace those whose deity is imminent in a dance of joy, in drum song, or a literate tattoo carved in flesh of sacred human body, knowing yours is the greatest of all bodies. Great Spirit, Great Father, Mother God, Great Mother, may we embrace those whose deity is the keeping of just law, and may we embrace those whose deity is the breaking of unjust law. May we embrace those whose deity is a sexual being, and those whose deity is a breath of sound, and those whose deity is crafting a talisman of jewels or beautiful cloth, a painting in sand of our lives as paintings in the wind, knowing yours is the gift of thoughtful action. Great Father, Mother God, Great Spirit, Great Dancing Mother, may we embrace those whose deity drips gore in the eternal boneyard of the non-reality of any body. And may we embrace just sitting with all being, those whose deity is present in a tender kiss of the baby God and the blessing of all relationships, knowing you are the blood-red web holding our short lives on this long earth. Great Mother, Great Spirit, Great Father, Mother God, may we embrace our own hearts. May our hearts stretch large as wombs, as consciousness, as the river of life. You of the nebulae and the black holes. You of the microbes and spinning cells. You of the shimmering cosmic delights. May our hearts stretch toward your heart. You of the largest heart. May we embrace.
That's beautiful. Well, that brings me to, do you think it matters what we name God or goddess, and what are some of the names you use?
I think it matters a lot, and if we doubt that for a minute, we have only to see the reaction of men when we want to substitute the word women for men in, you know, many of the writings that we grew up with, and certainly the huge reaction from both women and men if you say the word goddess instead of God, or even just to mention the possibility of female deity. So I have a couple of habits that I do where I used to often say, oh, thank God such and such happened. I now for years have said, thank goddess such and such. You know, little things that can shift people's consciousness I try to incorporate, and certainly I encourage. But for me, she is, I guess, overarchingly, most of the time, Shekhinah and Shaddai. Shaddai is the breasted god. Shekhinah, definitely. Lilith, Ishtar, Inanna, Asherah, Astarte, Oya, Yemaya, Oshun, Olokun, possibly Obatala, being male and female, and Eshu, Kalima, Badrakali, Dakshine Kalike. So I'm going to stop there because I won't just go on.
Yeah, we could go on and on. But I wonder, Devorah, and if you're like me, you know, it depends on what day you ask me, but do you see goddess as sort of you know, a mono one god, and all of these are like facets of the diamond that she is, or branches on the tree that she is? Or do you see these names that you've just shared as very distinct, different deity in their own right?
It's a great question, Karen, and for a number of years when I was first in this field learning about it, it was very confusing to me. You know, are we talking about the one or the many? And I've come to a point where I can honor that, you know, I love the expression, she of 10,000 names. In Judaism, there are at least 1,000 names for God. In Hinduism, and probably, well, Hinduism, let me just say that broadly, but that in my own mind, it includes Shakta tradition, which is, of course, based in the female. But it can be, you know, there are these traditions that have 10,000 names for God. And occasionally, for me, Shekhinah in particular, let's say, is overarching. as in the Yoruba pantheon, Olodumare is overarching. And if I'm in a Jewish synagogue, at especially maybe at high holidays, I want to incorporate five or six who I may even view as universal in the sense you're asking. So Adonai, Havaya, Yah, Shekhinah, and so on. But in the everyday, I may call on any one individual, you know, for a particular thing. If they have a specialty, let's say, or among the Orishas in Yoruba Ifa tradition, Ogun is in charge of metal and the forest, and Eshu is the keeper of the crossroads, right? And Elokun is the mystery at the bottom of the ocean. Yamaya is the mother who takes care of us all and can take us and care for us, as I imagine Shekhinah puts us under her wings sometimes and can take care of us and is an entity to whom we can, although I have trouble doing this, turn over our worries and our problems here at any given time. So it's really both for me. And that's because I've learned about both and over the last two decades at least, you know. It doesn't have to be either or. And so it's all of it for me, and just things come out of my mouth just because of what's coming through my body and in the moment. As you said, it can so much depend on not only the day but the situation.
Yeah. Well, and I think you just answered another question, too, you know, because I've had people say to me, well, Karen, how can you be drawn to Egyptian goddesses? You know, why aren't you into the Celtic pantheon, you know? And I don't really think I don't think we have to stick to such narrow versions of the deity that calls to us. You know, it doesn't have to be, of your lineage, so to speak, you know, your genetic lineage.
Absolutely. I think it's so much richer to incorporate many. I mean, I have an image of Keridwen in the kitchen. I have Oshun in the kitchen because that is part of her purview, you know, so... I think there's a lot of richness in studying other traditions, certainly, and important to be able to do that without feeling guilty, certainly. I think a lot of people are closed off because they're taught that theirs is the only way, and so they never learn about other traditions. And then I hope as adults, maybe they learn that, oh, we all want the same thing. Why are we fighting?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I was just showing some slides of sacred sites of goddess around the world, and started with the, Birkat Ram and, you know, the Moroccan Tantan and, all the way up to, goddesses' traditions are still alive today. And, you know, and I feel like, you know, she's the poster girl for diversity. You know, I mean, she's across continents and cultures, and it makes so much sense to me. If we just looked at her and embraced her, would we really be able to be fighting and killing each other? You know, I just don't think it's a female instinct to do that. And I don't know, I guess as we start to come to a close here, I wanted to ask you if, you maybe wanted to end our interview with maybe a blessing for the world today?
Sure. There's something else I just wanted to say to you. Oh, just, again, I guess the importance of being able to hold both and that which would keep us from, you know, pitting one against the other in that way.
Wait, speak to that, though, Devorah. That's kind of got buried. Speak to that. I think there was something you wanted to say.
I think I just wanted to emphasize the importance of holding two opposites, two seeming opposites, holding both and. Not that it has to be either your way is right and mine is wrong, or, you know, but that we can both have a point. And that holds true for different goddesses. And when I was first doing my work on Lilith, you know, she's demonized always. And I asked my advisor, Betty Deshong Metter of Blessed Memory, well, couldn't she be an aspect of Inanna and Ishtar? And so that really was the beginning of my understanding that, yes, and she thought, yes, that was entirely possible. So to answer your earlier question of, yes, this can be, you know, why are we trying always to define and divide this goddess, you know, and pit them even against each other, you know, if it is the many aspects of us and of her.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So thank you for the invitation. Normally, as I said to you, I would do this at the beginning, but I think it fits wherever it happens. And that prayer was going to be, tell me how much time we have, because I was going to read something, but I could just speak something. So how much time do we have left?
We probably have about 5 minutes.
Perfect. Okay, so I'll start with an opening prayer from Carolyn Brandy, which is in Talking to Goddess, titled Moyuba, Highest Praises. Highest praises. Highest praises to everything that covers our heads. Highest praises to the light that lives inside of you. Highest praises to the great spirit, the owner of the womb, the owner of the day, the owner of the night, the owner of breath. Highest praises to the dead that sit at the foot of God. May they rest in peace. 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 And to the oceans, the rivers, the gentle breeze, the storming thunder, the earth, paths and crossroads, the herbs and medicines, snow-capped mountains, and to all the elements, we give them our respect and our gratitude. To be amongst them by whatever name they might be called or worshipped, our humility is our gift and our birthright, as it is for every human, growing as a seed under light of sun and moon. And to our children, we give our gratitude and our respect, for we are the ancestors of a coming age, a new age by whom we will be called the Ancient One.
Mm.
And so as we
Lovely.
Are standing, thanks to Carolyn Brandon, as we have been standing and we continue to stand on the shoulders of those who came before us, I give thanks and praise to the ancestors, both those in our bloodline, the affinity ancestors who we may not have been related to and may not even have met, but who had a big influence on our lives, big impact on our lives. And I especially pray for the elevation and healing of souls who have been forced to depart in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in the last few weeks. Certainly all of those who have lost their lives in the Ukraine-Russian war and anywhere else around the world where people have lost their lives through war or natural causes. We thank the ancestors. We pray for the elevation of their souls as we pray for our own healing as a world. Ashe, amen, and Selah.
Blessed be. What beautiful words, Devorah. I mean, this book should be on our shelves, and you know, when we need special words for a gathering or a meal or whatever it is, you know, what a wonderful resource to have at our disposal. I mean, these thoughtful, beautiful words that these women have put together. How does one find your book?
On Amazon, it can be found there, and I think probably through Abe Books, you know, the Advanced Book Exchange that often has used books, possibly there as well.
Okay. All right. And the title, Talking to Goddess.
There is a link on my shop page on the LilithInstitute.com. There are links to my books on the shop page, and also to my line of T-shirts and other things that say "What would Lilith do?"
Oh, I love that. Okay, I have to get one of those for myself. What would Lilith do? Okay, I need that. I need that. And also there, I just so you know, Devorah, there are links to your website on my page as well. So, and for those of you who maybe are hearing about Devorah for the first time, her name is Vorah Gren, Grenn. And do you mind if I ask you a weird question?
No, and I can also give my email if you wish. Go ahead.
Well, you give your email address first so we don't forget.
Don't forget your question. Okay, D like Debbie, V like Victor, O-R-A-H, at Lilith, L-I-L-I-T-H, institute.com.
Okay.
I'm happy to
okay.
Weird question.
Okay, so I'm almost embarrassed to ask you this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Because you're so learned in this area, and you know, and this, you know, it's always a woman's point of view is different. I just wanted to ask you if you have any thoughts on the Ark of the Covenant. Do you have any ideas of what it really was, where it might have gone to? Has that, you know, ever been something you've looked into?
Really not. I get a kick out of the fact that they've been building one, which I just heard is out of concrete in this country. But I really have no thoughts about it. I think it's part of the wonderful mythology, which many regard as definitely as history, and I don't hope to offend anyone. But for me, it's a wonderful, powerful story that we have in the Bible because it's lasted 2,000 years and people it has meant a lot to people. But I think it is a mythological story, so that would be probably also my answer, you know, regarding the Ark, that like the parting of the Red Sea, there are some scientific explanations to the events.
Okay. All right. Fair
that,
enough. Fair enough. I had to ask.
I had to ask.
So forgive me.
I don't know.
I think maybe it's...
Thank you so much. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I just want to thank you for the invitation to be here.
Oh, well, you know what? I had so much fun talking to you, and quite honestly, I could have chatted with you for another half hour, but, you know, time is running short on me here. But I'm so glad we did this. I can't believe we haven't done it before, but I'm glad I rectified it now, and you've been
everything
on the show.
Right
You're
time.
Just a delight.
Yeah. Thank you. You too, Karen. And thank you for all your work.
Thank you.
It's really valuable.
Well, and you know, same to you, and may you continue to be inspired and creative and, you know, in the force that you are in the world, because we certainly need you out there. Thank you, Devorah.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen.
Okay. Well, before we go, everyone, we need to hear from Jo Carson about her book, Celebrate Wildness.
This is from Jonathan Nightshade, a Gardnerian high priest of the Whitecroft line, a traditional craft practitioner and researcher, writing about Jo Carson's book, Celebrate Wildness, Magic, Mirth, and Love on the Farafaria Path. I love this book. How special this work is and how appreciated. As someone who was young in the 1970s and through the years only found snippets of information on Farafaria, one of the first modern pagan paths, this book comes as an artistic revelation of the core practices of the way of the goddess and gods reborn for the next age of the divine maiden. She has clearly introduced the historical background, philosophy and ritual practices of the joyous wilderness mysteries of the fairy faith, illuminated by the marvelous pagan art of Farafaria's founder, Fred Adams. I was very pleased that the high-quality production of this oversized volume makes it a collectible work of art, as well as a testament to the visionary philosophy of Fred Adams. I feel blessed that I received a copy. I will treasure it and look forward to the next book for more of the deep philosophy and ritual practice of Farafaria.
Celebrate Wildness is a dense art book quality hardcover book. You can get it for just $45 from the Farafaria website at farafaria.org. That's FERAFERIA.org.
And one more thing before you go. This is the last time I'll have the opportunity to tell you about this. November 6th through 8th, there is a Sacred Feminine Women's Gathering coming up in Mexico. It's going to be held in magical San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, November 6th through 8th. It's a beautiful small city in Mexico that Travel and Leisure voted the most enchanting destination in Mexico for 2023. The group called Calling the Circle will have ceremony with native facilitators, speakers who will share goddess wisdom, smaller sister discussion groups, journaling, sound healing, and collaborative creative experiences. The intention of the gathering is to connect, inspire, empower, and celebrate the divine feminine in us all. Their words, they say, join us as we connect with the essence of goddess wisdom, learn from women considered inspirational leaders in their fields, and explore topics that include sacred feminine spirituality, ancient matriarchal cultures, ritual creativity, and the visionary path into this new time. This will be a time to nourish and transform ourselves and our world at this time of deep awakening. And to find out more or to register, you go to their website, which is sacredfeminincircle.com, sacredfeminincircle.com. Also, a shout out to Celia for letting us use her music, and that cut opening the show was called Meta Prayer, and we always close the show with an homage to Sekhmet by Abigail Spinner McBride, so thanks to Abigail as well. So thank you, dear listeners, for you know, your valuable time, for your listener loyalty. And just a reminder, if you would like to advertise your book, your event, whatever your project is here on Voices of the Sacred Feminine, our commercials are very affordable. And please do go check out my website at KarenTate.net. Lots of great stuff there, lots of free stuff, lots of information. You can check out podcasts, articles, services that and talks that I'm available to give to your group, and I think some funny sacred travel stories as well. They'll give you a chuckle. All right, that about does it for me, and thanks to Devorah again for an incredible interview. I really enjoyed it. You can tell I didn't even do my commercials at the half-hour point. We were just too deep in. I didn't want to interrupt our flow. So goodbye, Devorah, for today. Hope you will be back another time so we can continue our conversation. And for all of you listeners out there, this is our homage to Sekhmet, lion-headed Egyptian goddess who speaks to women about having safe, healthy boundaries, teaches them to say no without guilt, to find their courage, their inspiration, their healing, and their tenacity. I like to call her the Lady of Tenacity Manifested. So, Sekhmet, we honor you.